I'm Steve Martin, our guest today, Judy Collins. I cannot say enough about the incredible voice and history involved with this just overwhelming performer artist. She has a brand new album, Spellbound. It's the first time she's had an album of original composition. She plays piano on everything. She wrote everything. We're going to talk about Spellbound. We're going to talk about Winter Stories, which is an album she released in 2019 of bluegrass songs. Judy Collins coming up. We're going to start you off with the title cut from Spellbound, and I am spellbound. Every time I hear Judy Collins sing a song, it becomes hers. We'll talk about that a little bit, the effect that she has on songs written by other songwriters. In my mind, once you hear Judy Collins do Send in the Clowns or Both Sides Now, that's the way you're going to hear it in your head forever and ever and ever. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard the title cut from a brand new album, Spellbound. That was the title cut, Spellbound, a brand new album released February of 2022 by my very special guest today, Judy Collins. Judy Collins, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks so much, and thanks for playing Spellbound.
It's such a beautiful song. The whole album is just, as soon as I got it, I put it in, I thought, and this was an odd reaction. I put it in and I thought, oh, my God, it's Judy Collins. And, and the reason I say that is you are the voice of so much of my life. And we're sort of contemporaries from the 60s, and so much of your music is just embedded in me. And when I hear all these new songs, I'm just immediately back in that world and current times, too, and just absolute gorgeous, gorgeous music. Thank you so much for doing that.
My pleasure. I am so thrilled with this new album, and I'm thrilled that you've been listening all these years.
Well, it's been a few years. And this album, as I understand it, is this Spellbound, which was released on Cleopatra Records. Is this, am I right, that this is the first album that these are all compositions of yours?
Yes, it's the first time. I've written over the past 60 years since being questioned by Leonard Cohen why I wasn't writing my own songs.
That's right.
I have written 60 songs, which I can count. I've recorded and put them on one or two or three on all my albums since then, all my Judy Collins albums. But I decided to go for it and do a whole album of my own things. I've started to write a lot more in my co-writing with Ari Hess. I got very excited about my own stuff and dragged it out for him to look at it, and he co-wrote one of them with me. He wrote Hell on Wheels with me. But meantime, he just gave me encouragement, and so I said, well, I'm going to just see what I can do here for an entire album.
And you mentioned Leonard Cohen, and I think the tune that most people would associate with you and maybe with the beginning of Leonard Cohen's singing career is Suzanne, and
yeah.
I've read the story and heard the story where the connection was made, and Leonard talks about this, the connection you do too in your biography, the sweet SWEET Judy Blue Eyes, which is just I would say anyone should get it and listen to it. And I'll tell you why in a minute. There's many reasons, not just for the information, but so there's a connection made with you and Leonard Cohen in, I think, in New York as he's traveling down to Nashville, and he didn't think much of himself as a singer, and you recorded Suzanne, and I think after that, was it around that time that he suggested you should write songs?
That's right. He said, you've made me famous now, and which is wonderful, but I want you to record all my songs, but I don't understand why you don't write any songs. I was the only girl standing, the only folk singer standing, female, who was not writing songs in the 60s, and now it was 66, and he was asking me, so I just went and came home, sat down at my Steinway, and wrote Since You've Asked, and it was a lucky break on my part.
And you, on this album, Spellbound, which is at least the jumping-off point for our conversation, and I want to stress that that's a brand-new album that's available in Cleopatra, but you were a classically trained pianist, I believe.
So
do we hear your piano throughout Spellbound? Is that you playing?
Oh, yes. I play on everything on this album. I don't think that there was anything I laid off on. And I wrote them all on the piano. I don't write anything on the guitar. I think in these 60 or so years, I think I might have written two songs on the guitar. But the piano is my instrument, so that's where I have fun.
And you play, and again, I have the virtue of having listened to you for so many years and also having gone back and caught, you've written many, many books. The one that I focused on to get ready for today was the Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. And I know from your childhood that you were exposed to piano, you played piano seriously, then you became a folk singer, sort of. I'm cutting a lot of time out of there, but you always came back to the piano.
Yeah, I always come back to the piano. That's where I started when I was 4 and a half, maybe, and I continued all through it. And it's the place where I have my inspirations. Things come to me. All the songs that I've written at this piano that's in my studio, it's the same Steinway that I wrote since you've asked on
really?
In 1966, same piano. I made an exception. I wrote The Blizzard on a Yamaha, which I had up in the country for a few years. But everything else has been written here in my studio.
Let me talk a little bit about the 60s. You mentioned you might have been the only one not writing your songs. Is that, I remember that as kind of being a unique feature of not just the 60s folk movement, but also rock and roll. Didn't that become where singers were supposed to or expected to write their own songs? That didn't really exist prior to that time. I mean, the great, great singers that we know of were singing songwriter songs.
Yes, they were. But then, of course, it came about in part because there's something called the performance royalty, which we don't get on radio. The writer and the publisher gets the two pennies, but the performer, like me and everybody else who sang other people's songs, gets zero squat. And because of that, for instance, Barbra Streisand began taking lyric credit for writing some of the songs that she sang, and we now know why. I always thought she was just cheating, but she was taking advantage of having a foot in the door so that she would get a piece of that performance royalty. And I think that's part of what affected us. I didn't know about it, or perhaps I might have started doing it a lot. I didn't know about that until about maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. When I went to the Congress along with Sam Moore of Sam and Dave to try to get the bill changed. It's been in effect since 1939, since the year I was born. It's now, I believe, it's in Congress. Everybody's tried to change it for decades because it resulted, we are the only country in the free world who does not have a performance royalty on what we now call terrestrial radio. All the old radio stations that used to and still do play our songs like mad.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't get that royalty. After we had appeared in front of Congress, Sam's wife said to me, you know, last time we were here, we got death threats. You know, you don't think it's a big deal. It's a very big deal. It's a huge, huge, huge amount of money, which goes to the radio stations and doesn't go
anywhere else. And for the people listening, go ahead, you finish.
Well, I think that that's in part the reason that all the rock and rollers got smart.
That's a great point.
And began writing their own songs.
I never thought about that, but yeah, I always knew there was a reason why it started in the 60s. I mean, Sinatra didn't. He didn't write his own songs. He didn't have to. And none of those great singers.
But he never also got paid a royalty. He never got paid a performance royalty.
I guess he got paid off of what, record sales and then concerts?
Yeah, but when you have a record that's playing a million times on the pop radio stations and you're not getting that royalty, the first person that wrote publicly about it was Nancy Sinatra.
Wow.
And she wrote a big piece in the New York Times about 20 years ago and said, you know, it's a crime that artists do not get their publishing royalties, their performance royalties. Anyway, I think it's being changed in Congress. It looks like there's been a shift, and I forget the name of it, but it may be that we It may not help me anymore, but other artists it will. And
to the people listening, I'm speaking, I'm so happy to be talking to Judy Collins. And what she's talking about are, with every song, Judy, let's do it this way. There are a bundle of rights, and there are publishing rights. There are people who copyright the song. So what you're talking about is the performance royalties.
That's right. And
everybody else gets a piece, except I guess the people who stand
and
make it popular. And it's never been fair.
Counts in a way.
Yeah.
So you know, this is a perpetual resentment on my part.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's never been.
I can do about it.
It's never been fair. It's never been fair. And by the way, Sam Moore was on this show several years ago, and when you mentioned his name, I just have to smile because of how much fun we had and his connection. And he still sings great. He still sings great, and you do too, by the way. Listening to your autobiography, I knew you had some throat issues at one point, and that you're very careful about your singing voice, of course.
Yeah, you have to be. You have to take good care and not scream and not go to football games and not smoke and not drink and so on.
Were the songs on Spellbound mostly written during the time, I guess, the whole world was shut down for COVID? In other words, is that when you kind of sat with your piano and just time-wise these things came together?
I was starting to write a poem every day in 2016, and a lot of those made it to the, at least to the bench, the workbench, you know, where I could figure them out. And then when the pandemic started, I did take those and then added more. So by the time 21 came about, we found studios in New York where we were able to go and record.
Oh, okay.
I think I had my first sessions for this album came in 2019, I think in October. I think we recorded Arizona and maybe a Grand Canyon, and possibly, I don't think we recorded the Thomas Merton song, because I don't think it was done yet. But there were, I think, three or four sessions. And when I record, I go into the studio with five or six other brilliant musicians, and we work live. It's all live.
Okay. There are several. You mentioned Arizona. And by the way, I didn't want to let this slide. You mentioned the tune that you wrote a few minutes ago, entitled Blizzard, which you said you may have written that on a guitar. That's on the Winter Stories album, if I'm correct.
Yes, there's
a lot of bluegrassy sounds on that album. I wouldn't call it all bluegrass, but certainly fits in a big umbrella of bluegrass and Americana music. So there are a number of songs on Spellbound. You mentioned Grand Canyon, Arizona, several tunes that Prairie Dream, City of Awakening is not really about a specific city, but When I Was a Girl in Colorado. I think you're getting those images back from that time, and then you go ahead.
And it's very, very much when my friend reminds me that I could, he suggests that I make it into some sort of a show. Because he says it's biographical, and it would be very easy to write around it and to do it as a performance piece or a Broadway piece.
That would really be great, because you have, of course, you know what you have in your books, and you've written many, but in Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, you could really just kind of build these songs around those movements within your autobiography. That would be fantastic.
It's a good idea. I think I'll try to think about it.
I think you should think about it. I would love to see that. You mentioned Thomas Merton, which, by the way, I knew who Thomas Merton was before I listened to the album. In undergrad, I was a philosophy political science major, and he's one of those people that was not just in the '60s movement, but he was so much into crossing barriers in religion and just thoughts like that. So Thomas Merton, that's an interesting song to me for that reason. But you wrote a song about Thomas Merton. It must have been from your experiences in the '60s, '70s, when he was out really trying to unite religion, trying to get away with barriers or do away with barriers between belief systems.
Well, you know, it's a murder mystery.
Yes.
That song.
Yes.
And I didn't know anything about his murder, but he was murdered in Thailand. There was always a story that he was
electrocuted
accidentally, but it wasn't true. Apparently, people have found information that led everyone to say, and it made sense. He was in Thailand for an international meditation and, that kind of work. The Dalai Lama had actually invited him to go, and the Americans were there. The CIA was in Thailand using Thailand bombing runs to bomb Cambodia and Laos and Vietnam. And, of course, Thomas Merton was a real danger. He was warned by the Catholic Church to stop talking against the war early on when he started. And so he started writing these long letters to everybody he could think of. And he was a threat. And after he died, the church issued a kind of, I guess they call it a bull, where they said Thomas Merton is never going to be sainted because he was against the war and spoke out against the war in Vietnam.
He was in the monastery in Kentucky, too far from where I live, and he was denied all sorts of access to getting out and being able to speak. But isn't that amazing that a church would take that position as it relates to his comments on war and peace? It just blows your mind.
It does blow your mind. I read Thomas Merton almost every day of my life.
Oh, great.
Books. So that's why I got really interested in the 60s, because I'd read The Seven Story Mountain.
Yeah, that seems to be the one.
I loved the work that I had read. I've got some of these books right here, including the book that I found that has the story of his murder, which is called The Martyrdom of Thomas Merton.
Yeah, I remember that one,
and
too.
I have The Waters of Silo here that I read from time to time. So I've been an intensely Merton person for a long time.
Here I am for the folks of Unreal Bluegrass. I'm speaking with Judy Collins. Wait, I'm speaking with Judy Collins about this wonderful album, Spellbound, and she's pulling books off of her shelf. And if only we could see them. If only we could see them. That's just amazing to me that you're sitting right there in your comfort zone, and you're able to reach out and find the Thomas Merton books. Those books are all the ones that he seems to be known for more than that. But he wrote nonstop.
He wrote nonstop. He wrote 70 books.
Wow.
The Seven Story Mountain sold millions of copies.
Yes, it did.
And he started writing when he got to Gethsemane, to the monastery. He didn't write before that. Well, he may have written a few letters.
Yeah, letters, I think, but not books.
He wrote all of his books at the monastery, and they have all of his money. I'm sorry to say it, but I can't imagine that there was not some collusion involved in his murder. I don't know where it came from. I don't know why it happened then, but I know that it's not clear what happened. It's very fuzzy. The guy who found him disappeared and was never seen again.
Holy moly.
The military. Can you imagine this? The military flew his body out of Thailand, and there was no autopsy.
I wasn't aware of that. I mean, of course, I listened to the words in your song, and I get that came up at the end. But,
yeah, I didn't even talk about that.
No, just a little bit. There's a little bit at the end of it. Although, I will tell you this, the Abbey down there, and they've gotten my last order for a fruitcake, by the way. They sell really good fruitcakes around Christmas. Yeah, and so now, if they're holding money that which should have gone to Merton or something, I'm not going to buy any more of them.
No. That was made in the early days, and it's fine. I don't care. I would love to get some of the fruitcake, but I don't eat fruitcake.
I don't either. I don't either. I buy them as a gift. But you can never go wrong there. What can I ask you about Shipwrecked Mariner? Most of the songs on Spellbound, which is our jumping off point, an absolutely gorgeous album. Judy Collins, your voice is as strong and as powerful as it ever was, and I just enjoy the sound so much in the words that you've written.
Oh,
I have to keep saying
so
that. Shipwrecked Manor, so many of your songs about, well, we're looking at When I Was a Girl in Colorado and Arizona, Grand Canyon. Shipwrecked Mariner is not one of those Wild West songs with the prairie. Tell me about that one. That intrigues me.
I like the phrase, shipwrecked mariner. I found it somewhere. I wrote it down in my notebook. Nowadays, I do it on my phone.
Right. That's what everybody does now.
And I found the phrase. I said, that's going to be a song. And you came to my bed like a shipwrecked mariner. And
it
turned itself into a sort of an abandoned love song, one of those things.
There's something about, of course, there's so much of the earth is water and there's so many people on it, but there's something about those songs involving the water, the water's edge,
yeah.
Rivers that just are just like one of those things that everybody comes back to. And it rings a bell whether you've lived on the water or not.
Yeah, I wrote one of the songs is Wild with Mist,
mm-hmm.
and it's about a Turner painting about where it has whales in it. You know, Turner painted a lot of whales, and then I slipped in the part about that he had a lover in a little town in near London. So I had a lot of fun with this writing, I must say.
Well, do you have anything else in the works? I mean, not that, hey, you did this in February, what else? Are you working on a follow-up to this with some songs you've written?
Well, there are a lot of songs that are hanging around waiting either to be finished or to be added.
Well, I wasn't sure from things as I read and did more research whether you had indicated that and whether somebody misinterpreted it, that you would necessarily, I mean, just release this one, just take your time and do the show.
I have some other things to put together, and I want to get to those eventually,
sure.
A few different projects. But the writing continues, the poetry continues. I've written a few hundred poems, which were the starter. It's like starter dough for the song. And some of them are being gathered together for a book of poetry. So we'll see how that
great.
Goes.
I was going to say, if you've released a book of poetry, I haven't seen it, but that would be wonderful.
But I'm going to, I think. If they can meet the grade, and then I'll put also the 60 lyrics of the 60 lyrics that I've written in songs that I've recorded, I'll put those in there too.
Can you tell me about Gilded Rooms, which is Gilded Room, which is also on Spellbound? Then I want to talk to you about some other issues in your autobiography, which I just think is wonderful.
Thank you.
Sure. Gilded Room is a kind of a mysterious song to me on the Spellbound.
Well, I'm hoping it remains that way.
Well, then don't say anything else about it.
It's a mystery, and it involves two personalities that people may think they know who they are, but I'm not telling.
I think I could take a guess at it, but I'm not going to either because people should listen for their own sake. All these songs are just beautiful. The thing about, and I keep coming back to this, Judy, I'm talking to Judy Collins about Spellbound, her brand new album on Cleopatra Records, which was released in February. 29th studio album, does that sound right to you? 29th
well,
studio
actually,
album?
Actually, there are more.
Oh, my.
There are more. They're more like probably 45 or something.
Oh,
there are a few which were, I don't know. It's really high. It's a high note.
It's a lot. Judy Collins has been recording music a long time. It's all good, and it's a lot of it. But I would say this, too, that I've always felt your voice before I picked up on the songs you were writing, which are vast, that if I were a songwriter, you would be my singer of choice. I mean, that's not a hard choice to make, but when you do something with your singing, the very, very special phrasing that you use, that to me, every time I hear Send in the Clowns, it's your phrasing. You set the pattern for that. Every time I hear Suzanne, you set the pattern for that. Every time I hear Both Sides Now, you set the pattern for and Amazing Grace.
Good.
I think everybody sings Amazing Grace in your phrasing. I think that's just an amazing thing.
Well, I...
Congratulations.
I learned at the feet of a man, my dad, who was a great singer and a great interpreter and also a great chooser of songs.
Mm.
I think it has a lot to do with which songs you choose to sing.
Okay.
And I was talking with Yoko Ono one time, and she said You know, songs have a mind of their own. They know where they want to go.
I think there's got to be some mystical part of that, and we're the beneficiary of that. In the book, I'm going to play one of your songs as we leave, and think about which one you want me to play, because we're going to run out of time here. But in your book, at the end of the audiobook, there are half a dozen songs that when I ask people to find it and listen to it, at the end of that, there's like five or six songs that come right along with the audiobook of Sweet Judy Blue Eyes.
Good, I'd forgotten about that.
Oh, they're great. They're great. The other thing about listening to your voice read your book, and I love autobiographies read by the author, is...
Yeah, I do too.
That's the only way to do it. You can just listen to them. But you have a way of speaking, not to make you sound self-can, I'm sure you've been told this before, but you have, and I'm going to use a term people use for singers, I'm not a singer, but the phrasing that you use when you speak doesn't take long to recognize the phrasing that you use when you sing. You have this way of saying words and pronouncing and emphasizing things that I hear it in your vocal on the audiobook, and now I can find it in your songs. And I think that's a kind of a neat thing, that you speak the way you sing as far as the phrasing and the emphasis that you use.
Well, I learned the lesson that I learned from my teacher. I learned it from my father originally. Was that it's clarity and phrasing. As long as you get the meaning across to what the lyric is, you're doing it right. You may not have the voice of an angel. If you go back to early Dylan records, you understand every single word. I mean, he doesn't have a great voice. He has a really peculiar voice. But you understand every word, and that in its at the heart of it, that's really the test, isn't it?
And yeah, it is. It is. And he had so many words you had to understand because he was trying to say so much. I mean, it's some of those songs you just had, if you didn't get the words, it just would have been an attitude.
Yeah,
sometimes that's enough.
Going on.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, listen, pick for me, Judy Collins, pick for me one song from Spellbound. And when I say goodbye to you, which I'm so thankful that you were able to do this, pick one song from Spellbound. We've already given the audience the title cut Spellbound, but if after I say goodbye to you, I want to play one song from Spellbound, I want you to choose what it would be.
I would play Grand Canyon.
Grand Canyon, yeah. I've been there many, many times. And I will tell the listener that it's pretty much put you right at the edge of the room. This song and the sun rises. Listen, when we're all younger, we're driving across the road and we camp in a place we don't know where we are. We wake up, we're right on the edge of the rim. This was back in the 70s before they restricted entrance.
Wow.
And all of the colors and all the mist comes out of the canyon. And I'm glad you picked that song because it's so descriptive of what I saw.
Oh, good.
So easy to relate to. All of these songs, Judy Collins, I can't tell you, I can't express to you how much your singing and your songwriting has meant to me. It's not about me, but I mean, I think there's a lot of people in my position listening to this show that you are such a strong force in music and all through the 60s and currently still with Spellbound and everything else you've done. I would also implore people to... Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, I've mentioned that we're not here to sell that book. It was released in, I think, 2011. But if they want to listen to it, there are all kinds of new discussions that are now part of normal talk that we have about addiction issues. So I think that's important also. And we don't have time to go into that, but I'm really thankful that you went into that in the autobiography.
Yeah, I wanted to let people know that there is a solution.
There is a solution. And... now it's available. Now there's lines. Now there's places you can call out to get help. I just think
absolutely.
It's so you lived through that part when that wasn't easy. You had access to a lot of people, but it wasn't easy to find the one that said, this is a problem that's in your body.
That's right.
Yeah. Judy Collins, I'm going to let you go. Then I'm going to play for the audience Grand Canyon. I'm dropping in some other songs from this album and also from Winter Stories because, you know, it's ostensibly a bluegrass, although it's way beyond that.
Yeah.
So people like you helped me make it there.
Thank you.
I'm going to let you go. I know you're a busy, busy person, and thanks so much for the music.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you so much, Judy.
All right, dear. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much, Judy Collins. I just enjoyed the heck out of that and still enjoy her music and will forever.